From the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street, welcome in to another week and a Tuesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, the free Odyssey app, and of course streaming live on YouTube. 855-212-4227 is the number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. And you could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter X, whatever you want to call it, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. We have a loaded show for you. It is a fun time. It's also a sad time, though, because even though technically summer is not over, once Labor Day weekend does come and go, you could pour one out and say RIP to summer of 2024. And I had a wonderful summer. Hope you did as well. But it's also exciting because that means we know in college that football's already back. And for some teams like Florida State, we'll get to them in just a second, you may already say RIP to their football season. And then in 2 days from now, we kick off the 2024 NFL season with the Kansas City Chiefs, the back-to-back defending world champions, looking to be the first team to win three straight Super Bowls this year, kicking off their season up against the Baltimore Ravens on Thursday. We have a loaded show for you today. The head coach of the Boise State Broncos, Spencer Danielson, is going to stop by. And I would like to welcome back all of our great listeners in Boise. Throughout the last few years, ever since, you know, I've been jumping around time slots, you may have had to listen to me on Sirius XM channel 158 or stream the show via YouTube or the free Odyssey app. Well, the folks at KTIK, led by Prater and the Ball Game, they said, we need more Zach Gelb in our life. And I appreciate that. So they're now back, and they've been a longtime loyal affiliate. So it's good to have them back in the fold. And locally, if you're listening to us in Boise, I will be on Monday through Fridays from 1 to 3 p.m. Mountain Time, leading into my guys, Prater and the Ball Game. So Spencer Danielson, the head coach of the Boise State Broncos, is going to join us at the top of the hour. And then coming up in the final hour of the show at 5:20 p.m. Eastern, 2:20 p.m. Pacific, former NFL linebacker, all-pro linebacker Sean Merriman will stop by. Okay, enough with the lovey-dovey talk. Enough with saying hello and goodbye to summer. Let's start things off in college football. As each and every year, there is a surprise team in a good way and a surprise team in a bad way. Last year, I looked at Florida State heading into the football season. I said they were going to win the ACC. Now, we all know Florida State was undefeated. Unfortunately, their quarterback got hurt. And I thought it was the right move, even though it sucked, to leave out Florida State in a four-team college football playoff. Let me be abundantly clear. Everything that's going on with Florida State, I don't think it has anything to do with what happened last year in terms of, oh, they got robbed, now there's a hangover, and now Florida State is just feeling the impact from a year ago. I think it shows you the good and bad of teams that live in the transfer portal. Now, let's not be naive. Like, Florida State lost Jordan Travis. They lost Jared Verse. They lost Braden Fisk. Those are players that are very tough to replace. But this idea that Florida State is now still feeling the impact and the letdown mentally of what happened a year ago is a bunch of nonsense. It's a new season. Each and every year, we look at teams in like the Associated Press poll or the coaches poll that have a reputation from what they did last year and then get overranked. And that's what's transpiring right now with Florida State. And not only that, even though Mike Norvell last year was getting praised and, hey, I led the charge on that. Norvell comes on the show all the time for perfecting the transfer portal. In reality, perfecting the transfer portal doesn't exist. Because even Nick Saban, right? Who had Nick Saban cursing before McAfee on College Game Day? But his point was, you could spend all this money. What happens if your players aren't what you're paying for? Then you're bleep out of luck, as Nick Saban so eloquently said this past Saturday on College Game Day. And that's what's kind of happening now with Florida State. They lived off their reputation of last year. They hit the transfer portal hard, and the players that they got either have not formed well enough together from a chemistry standpoint or aren't that good. And it would be disingenuous, and I know sometimes we simplify this, where we talk about football and the national hosts, or even locally, we only talk about the quarterback and we only talk about the head coach. But when you start with Florida State, it's impossible to not bring up DJ Uiagalelei. Because DJ Uiagalelei could be the most overhyped college quarterback that I have ever seen. Think about that night when he was in for Trevor Lawrence, who had COVID, and they were up against Notre Dame. And even though Clemson lost, we got a little bit of DJ Uiagalelei in that game. 29 of 44, 439 yards, two passing touchdowns, and a rushing touchdown. But it's more than just those stats. Because now, multiple programs have been fooled by who DJ Uiagalelei is. And I'm not blaming it only on the youngster, right? Dabo Swinney, the way that he handled DJ Uiagalelei was not the best of Dabo Swinney's interest and the best of his abilities. And we've seen Clemson start to fall the other way now. But eventually, when you go from stop to stop to stop, and you're not a great player, and you're not what we were told you were going to be, you could only blame coaching so much. And it even happens in week one. That Florida State coaching staff up against Georgia Tech did not trust DJ Uiagalelei. They didn't. They did not let him throw the ball vertically down the field. Simple concept, but they didn't let him do that. And yes, late in that contest, when I was coming back from Vegas and I was watching the game on the plane, he made some big plays on fourth down. But even though you could say, okay, they lost that game, but he played well in the fourth quarter, it doesn't erase what we saw the three previous quarters before the fourth. So you had Florida State lose to Georgia Tech, and then they had a game up against Boston College, who, I get it, Bill O'Brien, in really tough circumstances, doesn't get enough credit for the job that he did at Penn State. And I've always said that Bill O'Brien is more of a college coach than an NFL coach, and he's had success in the NFL. I know we look at Bill O'Brien a different way with how it ended, but what transpired last night should not happen when you have a new regime, a new staff, and a ton of new players with Boston College. But it wasn't crazy what Boston College did to Florida State. They weren't intimidated of DJ Uiagalelei, and they said, hey, Florida State, how you were built last year, we're going to beat you at your own game. We're going to dominate you in the trenches, and look at the way that Boston College ran the ball all night long against Florida State. And Florida State had no answers for it. Because you go back to that game last night, this told me everything I need to know about Florida State this year. And let me be clear. I thought Florida State was going to have a solid season. I didn't think they were going to win the ACC. I picked Virginia Tech to do so, who lost to Vanderbilt this past weekend. But that's besides the point. I did not pick Florida State to win the ACC, but I thought they were going to have a good season. But think about it now. They're 0-2, and their two losses, I'm taking nothing away from Georgia Tech or Boston College, but they're to those two schools. They haven't even played Clemson yet. They haven't even played Miami yet. Hello, Cam Ward. They haven't even played Notre Dame yet. So they still have a very tough schedule, and the two teams that they were supposed to beat, they didn't beat. So they could bounce back, and hey, they could be 0-3 after September 14th because Memphis is no joke. Then you play California, then you play SMU. But one of the games I was the most excited for heading into this college football season was Florida State and Clemson. That's October 5th. That's not that far away. That's a month away. And for Florida State, 2 weeks of their season, and for Clemson, 1 week of their season, that game already feels shot. That game, all the hype, all the anticipation, DJ Uiagalelei going up against Dabo Swinney, whew, right out the window. But going back to Florida State last night, here's where I knew they were cooked. They got off to a slow start. Florida State did not play a great first half. But towards the end of the first half, their defense, three and out, three and out. So you get the ball to open up the second half in a game that the deficit's only 8 points. We're not talking about 28-3. We're not talking about a lead that feels insurmountable. We're talking about an 8-point game. 8 points was the differential. As bad as the first half was for Florida State, up against Boston College, they left the field for the third quarter down 8 points. You could make that up. But when you try to make that up on one drive or all in one play, and you show that you're nervous, you show panic, you show fear, and you show that you're desperate, a professional coach like Bill O'Brien's going to take advantage of this. And at 14-6, when it's 4th and 5 at Florida State's 47-yard line, I don't give a rat's ass what analytical nerd is going to tell me. Oh, you go for it, you go for it, you go for it. In that spot, down 14-6, when your offense has given you no reason to trust them, and you still have the majority of the third quarter left, you have all the fourth quarter left, and you're down 8 damn points, and your defense is starting to heat up, you punt the football. Instead, Mike Norvell and company said, we're going to have DJ Uiagalelei go for it and throw the ball. And DJ made a mistake. He threw an interception. And then 2 plays later, Boston College put the ball in the end zone, and the game was over. And quite frankly, the Florida State season was over. It was night-night at 21-6. There was no way Florida State was coming back from 21-6. But it is inconceivable to me why they would panic in that spot. But it shows you right now with that panic that there are bigger issues with Florida State. It's one thing to be 0-2. It's one thing to get off to a really ugly start. And I know the world feels like the sky is falling down and crashing on them. Totally understand that. But Florida State showed that they were nervous, showed that they panicked, and showed that they were desperate when they didn't need to. On the first drive, coming out of halftime, when you're only down by 8 points. Punt the ball, play field position, pin them inside the 10-yard line, 5-yard line, and trust your defense to get you the ball back where you'll flip the field position. But Florida State didn't do that. So, man, Florida State's in a rough spot. And after week one, in a 12-team playoff format, you know, I could still sell you optimism after you lost to Georgia Tech. But when you follow it up with a 28-13 beatdown and you lose to Boston College, I don't care if technically you could say, oh, they could get hot, they could go win the ACC. Oh, they're still alive in a 12-team playoff format nonsense. This team's 0-2. DJ Uiagalelei is one of the most overrated college quarterbacks from what he was hyped out to be. And this has just been, it's almost, I can't even use the word disappointing, because this is beyond disappointing. And their schedule only gets tougher from here. You know, I've been critical of Clemson. You still got Clemson on that schedule. You still got Miami, and you still got Notre Dame. Let's hear a little bit from Mike Norvell. Here is the head coach of the Florida State Seminoles with his team starting 0-2 on the season.
You know, sick to how the season started. Obviously tonight, I failed in preparing the team to be able to go out and respond tonight.
He did. And I love Mike Norvell. But that team, they just still look like they were trying to make up for what happened in week one. And you can't go about it that way. You had to flush it, and you had to treat it like it was a new game, and they failed to do so. And also, let me say this. I know this is like, let's go crush Mike Norvell Day and DJ Uiagalelei Day, and we'll do our fair share of that. Don't get me wrong. I do find it weird how many people are rooting against Florida State. I know they're suing the ACC, so that could be part of the reason why. And they were very vocal last year in getting left out of the college football playoff. I don't think that should generate animosity towards Florida State in terms of the second part, with how vocal they were in not getting into the college football playoff. And also, anyone today saying Mike Norvell's going to get fired, did people forget that this guy received a contract extension? for, I think it was 8 years or so, at least through 2031, back in February of 2024. And his salary is like $9 or $10 million a year. So you can't have today is Mike Norvell in the hot seat talk. I think that's just the definition of jackassery. But it's wild how quickly this season has gone south. This was back on March 7, 2024 on our show. We had Mike Norvell on. And just listen to what Mike Norvell said about DJ Uiagalelei when I was talking to him and where we are here on September 3rd after Florida State has started 0-2.
What type of quarterback on the field with some of the good and the bad that we talked about do you think he could put together and kind of have for you guys this upcoming season?
You know, I mean, I think the sky's the limit. I think he's really learned throughout his career. You know, he's been in multiple offenses, was something that really was kind of attractive to us. As we've seen him, in kind of a true spread offense, is what he did, in Clemson, and then kind of more of a pro style approach, and a variety of things that he was asked to do there at Oregon State this last year, and to be able to have kind of a mix of both, and how we operate here is something that I'm excited about, the playmakers that we'll be able to surround him with, and obviously a chance for him to come in and grow and get better. And for us, it's just continuing to push the consistency of him being the best that he can be. I love his mindset, I love his approach, and really done a good job investing the work into this team and into learning all the things that we're going to ask him to do.
And think about where we are today. The sky is the limit to the sky is falling for Florida State. And this football season feels like it's over after an 0-2 start. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. I don't take any pride, and I don't feel all that great with the last 17 minutes of radio that we just did, having to crush Florida State. I will say when we return in 5 minutes, I will be like a fat kid in a candy store talking to you about my least favorite coach in college football, Dabo Sweeney. Because Clemson, we saw a big difference and a big statement from Clemson in not a good way with their performance up against Georgia. We'll talk about that next. This is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. The head coach of the Boise State Broncos, Spencer Danielson, will stop by at the top of the hour. Sean Merriman's going to join us today at 5:20 p.m. Eastern, 2:20 p.m. Pacific. All right, it is the Infinity Sports Network, and it is the Zach Gelb Show. Spencer Danielson, the coach of the Boise State Broncos, going to join us coming up at the top of the hour. Stu, how was your Labor Day weekend, by the way? I saw on some of your Twitter or Instagram posts, wherever it was on social media, you ended up going to Maine, and you got some lobster?
Yes.
And how was the lobster? I love lobster.
Lobster was great. I had like 3 lobster rolls, all very, very good.
3?
Yes.
You didn't get tired with all that lobster?
I don't know if I could have done a 4th. I think 3 was a good number. Yeah, a little gluttonous, but, I don't know when I'm going to be back in that area, so I feel like I had to try a few of the different places.
Yeah, I had a long but a good Labor Day weekend. Saturday, I went to Marash's house from noon to at least 11:30 at night, and we were watching college football game after college football game after college football game. Bogish was there. Carlos with a K was there. Our old buddy Mike Carver was there, Carver High, from Pharrell on the Bench, shake it up. So it was good to see everyone and hang out with everyone, but the food spread at Marash's house was just ridiculous. I brought Chick-fil-A. So we started everyone off with a little appetizer, Chick-fil-A tray. He then had bourbon wings. He had buffalo wings. He then had just hero after hero. There were hot dogs. There were hamburgers. There was sausage and peppers. The food and the drinks were flowing just all day long. And then the desserts. There was like donuts. There was these Rice Krispie treats that were like specially made. It was just a really good time at Mraz's house. And I'll tell you, Stu, even if you had a terrible Labor Day weekend, which I know you didn't, and I had a very good Labor Day weekend, then on Sunday I kind of just chilled with the fam, and then Monday I did play some golf. It could not be worse than the Florida State fans' Labor Day weekend, who elected to tweet out before the Florida State-BC game the other night, "If Florida State loses to BC this weekend, I will eat dog bleep out of a red Solo cup with a spoon and post a video of me doing it. His account now no longer exists because he deleted it, and now everyone's trying to figure out who this guy or who this gal is that was tweeting out that if Florida State loses to BC, they will eat dog poop. Kind of reminds you of the scene from American Wedding when Stifler has to eat the dog poop trying to get the ring back from the dog that he fed the dog the engagement or the wedding ring to, and then had to eat the poop because someone else thought it was like a chocolate truffle or something like that. So glad you didn't have to eat any dog poop.
Me too. Yes.
And neither did I. Mraz may eat dog poop. Who knows? Like, if there was one person in the history of this network to eat dog poop, you'd probably think when Mraz is working with DA that it would be Sean Marash. Anywho, when I was watching that Georgia-Clemson game, because that was on right at noon, and I walked into that game, and I made it abundantly clear on this show that you were going to see the difference between an elite great program like Georgia, and you're going to see how far Clemson has fallen off. Like, Clemson's still a good program. Clemson still has a good team. But let's not sugarcoat this. The standard for Clemson that Dabo Swinney has won two national championships, 2016 and 2018, is to be a great program, is to be an elite program. Now, year in and year out, they're not always going to be great. But we have now seen Clemson be far removed, and they are now far away from their days. Forget about winning a national championship, contending for a national championship again. And I remember a few years ago at the Super Bowl, I had a conversation with Isaiah Simmons, former Clemson Tiger, and he's like, how can you say Clemson isn't great? And I said what I just said, and then afterwards he was like, okay, you actually make a fair point. But the problem with Clemson now also used to be their greatest strength, and that's Dabo Swinney. I'm not taking anything away from what Dabo Swinney has built at Clemson. What he has done and the success that he's had at Clemson is unimaginable. No one could have predicted that when he got the job. If when he got the job, you said Dabo would go on to win two national championships, forget even just two national championships, I was just getting to a national championship game, everyone would have said, you need to get drug tested, or they would have laughed at you until you walked away. But Dabo, his arrogance and his overconfidence has led to his demise. Where just winning 9-10 games and winning the ACC, what does it lead to? And when you walked into this game, there's no doubt about it, Georgia's the best team in the country. There's no doubt about it, Georgia right now is the best program in the country. So I was expecting Georgia to win the game. My question was, would it be a blowout? And would it reiterate what Clemson has become? Or would Dabo show I could still compete with the top dogs, even if he didn't win the game, but make it a game? And when I was watching that first quarter, and I saw it was a scoreless first quarter, I've never seen a game where it's a scoreless first quarter, or heck, even a first half, where it was 6-0. Because at the end of the first half, that was 6-0 in favor of Georgia. And it was so obvious to anyone that actually watches college football that Georgia was 10 times better than Clemson. And now Dabo's stubbornness and his arrogance, and I said this for the last 3 years, this is nothing new, is costing Clemson. And Clemson will never move on from Dabo in terms of they're not going to fire Dabo. And I'm not sitting here today saying Dabo needs to be fired. But with that being said, when you look at Clemson, if they want to find a way to get better, if they want to find a way, it's weird to say things that happened in 2016, 2018, return to their glory days, they need a change from the man that runs the program in Dabo Swinney. Dabo makes fun of name, image, and likeness. Remember he said, our program was based off the name, image, and likeness of God. I know Dabo's a man of faith. That was said in a mocking and condescending way. Also, Dabo Swinney, we have been saying for the last 2 years, utilize the transfer portal. Utilize it. And he refuses to do so. Oh, well, we recruit a specific player. We have the best players. We have great players. We have Clemson players. What are Clemson players now? Because Clemson players that I know, when Dabo Sweeney was running this program to a spot where they put not only legitimate fear into the eyes of Alabama, but they won two national championships, is not the same Clemson player anymore. The offensive line has been brutal for years. The quarterback play has been disappointing. When it happened with DJ Uiagalelei, who has zone problems, don't get me wrong. Okay, it's one quarterback. But what has Cade Klubnik been? Another disappointment. This is a Clemson team that has fallen. And they have fallen to a point where they could still be good, but they are far away from being great. They are far away from being elite. And you saw that in full display where, let's be real about it, Georgia didn't even play their best game. This was like a bye week for Georgia up against freaking Clemson, for crying out loud. Georgia played what, at best, a B-minus football game? It was 6-0 at halftime. And at halftime, with it only being 6-0 in favor of Georgia, Clemson looked like a winless Lions team, and Georgia looked like they were the 85 Bears, for crying out loud. That's how obvious the difference was between these two teams. But until Dabo Sweeney says, I'm going to utilize the transfer portal, I'm going to adapt to the new era of college football, Clemson ain't win another damn thing that's really ever important again. And save me, oh, they could win the ACC championship. Who cares? That's not how you judge success at Clemson now. It's about competing for national championships. And that's the high standard that Dabo has built there. It's also the standard that he's failing to meet. And until he says, I need to change, like when Mike Krzyzewski said, I need to go get one and dones, you're never going to see Clemson be a great program again under the tutelage of one Dabo Sweeney. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. You know what? A big reason why I can't stand Dabo Sweeney is I'm a very simple person. I like accountability. When you mess up, you raise your hand and you say, I got it wrong, and then you show me actions that tell me why you will fix it. And with Dabo Sweeney, he will say, hey, I got to be better. But he never creates any action that will determine change and that will create change. So I haven't heard this yet. And it was sent to me over the weekend, but I wanted to wait till on the air to listen to it. Here is Dabo Sweeney on the blowout loss to Georgia.
Yeah, just really disappointed. And biggest thing is, you know, when you don't finish, again, I've talked a lot about it, and I thought we did some good things in the first half. There'll be some things on tape, but, you know, you got to play four quarters. And we didn't do that. So biggest thing is, you know, that's when you get beat like that, that's on the head coach. That's on me. So it's just complete ownership of just a absolute crap second half.
Crap second half? What about the first half? In the first half, your offense, punt, 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 and a half. Like, what are we talking about? So he tries to sell you something that's nowhere close to the truth. That was That's what that was. That was just filling time, making it look like, oh, hey, I'm in the wrong. And Dabo, he can't be surprised by this. He can't be surprised by this whatsoever, because he needs to know down deep, and he knows down deep, that his team's nowhere close to Georgia. And his stubbornness is alarming, and he doesn't want to be held accountable. This is a guy that has went to the low level of not allowing callers into his coach's show now. Because callers will keep you honest. They'll tell you when you suck, and they'll tell you when you're good. It's sad. It's really sad what Dabo has become. But anyone that's telling you their surprise has been paying attention to the last 3 years of college football. Because I had these takes 3 years ago. I talked about his arrogance. I talked about his stubbornness. And I got dragged. I got dragged over every Clemson messenger board. Now those message boards are basically sounded like I was 3 years ago. So down goes Clemson when Georgia played what? A B game at best? That's alarming. Not that they lost, but it's how much it was a blowout. And Georgia wasn't even close to being the Georgia that we know of it. And Clemson is far, far removed from the Clemson that we used to love and that we used to watch and we used to expect great things out of. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll take a break. A huge win for USC. And what's going on with the LSU family? Update time. Here he is, the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. The Defensive Player of the Week is sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces, DOD veterans, and their families. The members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. This week's player is Alabama safety Keon Sab. The Michigan transfer had two interceptions and two tackles in Alabama's 63-0 win over Western Kentucky on Saturday. Alabama's defense as a team held the Western Kentucky ball club to just 145 total yards. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Boise State head coach Spencer Danielson is going to join us at the top of the hour in about 15 or so minutes from now. Let's continue to go over the college football that we got to see from this past weekend. The contest, and this game was on Sunday night, between USC and LSU. You know, I thought USC was actually going to win the game on Sunday morning because it felt like everyone was picking LSU, right? I am not afraid to talk about Lincoln Riley being overrated to some extent, but without Caleb Williams, and I should have trusted my gut here, but without Caleb Williams, I think we all thought, hey, USC wasn't even competitive in the Pac-12 last year. Now they go to the Big Ten. Lincoln Riley was afraid to play LSU as an SEC school to start off the season. It felt like this was shaping out to be an LSU victory. And usually when it feels like it's so one-sided against two really good programs, the thing that you don't expect to happen ends up happening. So for a lot of people nationally, it was Brian Kelly, Brian Kelly, Brian Kelly, and LSU defeating USC. And it was a really good quarterback duel between Miller Moss and Garrett Nussmeier. And think about it, USC, right? Miller Moss is replacing Caleb Williams, and LSU, you're replacing Jaden Daniels, the first and second picks of the draft. And that kid, Kyron Hudson, the one-handed catch was sick. And then the catch late on that game-winning drive was also ridiculous as well. But that game to me, and I know what I said about USC, how when it feels so obviously one way in favor of LSU that USC was going to win the game, on one of the gambling apps that I use and I frequent on, they offered a 50% boost any way you want on USC and LSU. So the smart Zach should have just said, okay, I'll take USC money line. But when you did a 50% odds boost, it put LSU just to win the game, not cover the spread, just win the game. It was at like 110, minus 110 or something. So I said, you know what? I'll throw some money on the odds boost with LSU money line. And you had LSU driving late, and Nussmeier was trying to put the ball in the end zone. He was out of the pocket on the run, and he just missed. I think it was his running back. And once that happened and they had to settle for a field goal, and that game was 20-20, you just felt like with under 2 minutes to go that USC was going to march the ball down the field, and they did so. So I still don't know what to make out of USC, but I think USC is going to be better than what people expected. Because without Caleb Williams, people thought the sky was going to fall for USC and Lincoln Riley, right? I never thought this for a second. Paul Feinbaum was like, oh, Lincoln Riley's on the hot seat. Maybe next year he could have been on the hot seat. But this year, there was no chance Lincoln Riley was ever going to get fired. So USC is a team. We talk about how much Florida State has fallen off this year with their two opening losses of the season against Georgia Tech and then last night against Boston College. But USC now is one of those teams that you're monitoring, that maybe they're better than what people anticipated after defeating LSU. Now, they play Utah State in week two. They should beat Utah State. And then after that, they got Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Penn State. I'll be fascinated after that October 12th game against Penn State where USC is going to be. And then they end the season with Maryland, Rutgers, Washington, Nebraska, UCLA, and Notre Dame. So we're monitoring USC. And that was a good close game. Whereas easily as USC won it, LSU could have just as easily won the football game as well. But Brian Kelly, where do we start? Well, it's actually ironic that the beginning of his tenure at LSU feels the same way now, because he arrived there as a good coach, a coach that brought Notre Dame back, and he elected to go to LSU because he thought he had a better chance to win a national championship at LSU than Notre Dame. And I think he's right in that gamble that he made, because at Notre Dame, it doesn't feel like, even though Notre Dame, they played a fine game. They weren't great against A&M, but they won the game. They needed to win the game. Their defense played really well, and you know Notre Dame has a good offensive line. I still have my questions about Riley Leonard. But at Notre Dame, there was a ceiling, and I don't think there's a national championship ceiling at Notre Dame. Say what you want about LSU, but they've had three coaches since 2000 to win a national championship. Nick Saban, Les Miles, and then go Tigers with Ed Orgeron. So Brian Kelly electing to go to LSU isn't the problem. It's Brian Kelly pretending to be like he's from the South to win over recruits. He started off his tenure, you know, I want you to welcome me to the LSU family. And I'm like, Brian Kelly's a Northeast guy. I've never heard him say family that way. So when I say Brian Kelly is a fraud, I don't mean he's a fraud as a football coach. The guy's a good football coach. But he's trying to pretend like he's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And that he grew up eating gumbo and po' boys. And going to Café Du Monde with the little beignet. Like, what are we talking about, Brian Kelly? But the real, but also fake Brian Kelly came out after this loss to USC. The real part is his accent isn't family. He sounds like a Northeast guy. But his outburst was just so contrived. It was so fake. Like, fake outrage. I had a friend in college. Whenever the Yankees wouldn't play well, and I'm not a Yankee fan, but whenever the Yankees wouldn't play well, he would like freak out about the Yankees. I'm like, you're not that actually fed up. The team's still solid. They're just in like a little bit of a rut. And I would always say, that's fake outrage. I'm not saying Brian Kelly's thrilled that he lost the game, but he's just trying to put on a show in front of the podium, and that's what makes it fake outrage. But his entire LSU tenure, even with two seasons to start his career, by the way, with two 10-win seasons, and he was an SEC championship game in year one, and now he's lost his three openers at LSU, the last two to Florida State and now to USC. But this is the fake outrage and the fake outburst from Brian Kelly after losing to USC in front of his LSU family.
We had some guys played their butts off tonight, and we're sitting here again talking about the same things, about not finishing when you have an opponent in a position to put them away. But what we're doing on the sideline is feeling like the game's over. And I'm so angry about it that I got to do something about it. I'm not doing a good enough job as a coach.
So what are you going to do about it? Like, that would be my question. Hey, Brian, hopefully I could join your family. What do you think and what do you need to have done in order to reach where you want to go? That's the answer that I wanted to hear, because he's not wrong. You know, the slamming of the table, please. It was a weak punch, too. I have slammed enough tables. I know when you're irate in a rant what is actually authentic and what is fake. That was fake. That wasn't reality from Brian Kelly. But the part he's not wrong about, and I don't know if his players think the game is over on the sidelines, but they had an opportunity to put a touchdown up, and they were driving, they were matriculating the ball down the field, and they failed in the big spot. But this idea that Brian Kelly was slam the table mad, it just rubs me the wrong way. Because you know when coaches literally lose their mind at the podium, and you go, okay, I could see that being genuine. There have been other instances, like James Franklin, after his team lost to Ohio State all those years ago, talking about his outrage over players not sitting in the first row of class. You know, Dan Mullen had a lot of excuses, and I like Dan when he comes on the show now, but he had a lot of excuses and silly excuses when he was the head coach at Florida. But Brian Kelly slamming the table, I don't know what was more fake. Brian Kelly slamming the table or Brian Kelly with that family accent when he first got the job. Like, Stu, you are Mr. Notre Dame over there.
Yeah.
So you do appreciate Brian Kelly to some extent.
Sure.
But I don't know what was more fake, the family part or the slamming of the table.
So I think the family part was 100% fake because obviously he has no Southern roots, all of that. I definitely think this was very fake, probably like 90% fake.
Like, he was probably a little mad,
but not that mad. He wasn't that mad. Yeah, definitely not.
But he sounded like the rich kid that was told, no, you don't get to get mom and dad's credit card for the day. And like, you're fake crying and like just throwing your hands on the floor and just slamming the you know, basically the air, punching the air. Like, that's what it was. You know, you're a Northeast guy, Brian Kelly. You could be a burly guy. If that was an actual slam, it would sound something like this. You know, I would be really mad. I think I was more mad there. I think I may have just broke my hand than Brian Kelly was at the podium. It was a weak slam. It was a weak finish for LSU, but it was even a weaker slam of the table for one Brian Kelly. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. What a start for Boise State. And they go up against Oregon coming up on Saturday. Huge, huge week two matchup. You can hear us on one of our affiliates, KTIK, locally in Boise. And the head coach, Spencer Danielson of the Boise State Broncos, will join us next.